Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
My preferred method of fixing this is take two swings at it. One, make like a veteran addition in the DJ Moore or Michael Pittman. Vets who can play inside out, can play Z, can play X, and then take another swing at it in round one at the draft. Whether it's Denzel Boston, many people are saying is the Diet Coke, Mike Evans, many people are saying that. You could take a swing at him like late in the first round. If you got to trade up a few spots, go and get him. I actually kind of like taking the two shots at it, as opposed to just one big swing.
Just like you. Matt Harmon with, I think it's Nate Tice, saying, every few seconds. DJ Moore.
Or laughing like that. Go get me a, you know, go shopping at a couple different stores.
DJ Moore will be tough for me, whether it's just in terms of fantasy, and I know this already, not assuming he'll be on the Bears, but he's under contract, or wherever else he goes. I've had enough with DJ Moore. I've had enough. I'm done. I can't say I'll never pick him, because nobody's like that. That's, you know, on the board.
Mm-hmm.
But every year with this guy, there's some excuse. And then last year, and I didn't really draft him at all last year either, because I was mostly this way. Plus, they had Odunze and then Luther Burden and running backs, and I just, Loveland, I just never wanted to draft DJ Moore. But then last year, toward the end of the season, this is for Chicago, he came on and he was productive. But how does the season end? They're playing the Rams. NBC has the game. Collinsworth. And there's an interception. Did that game go to overtime, I think, maybe? It was cold. And the Rams won it. And there was a play late that was a pass for DJ Moore.
It did go to overtime because, that interception was in overtime.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure. Because they tied it late on an incredible throw to the tight end. Was it Loveland in the end zone?
Or Komet.
Caleb Williams gave up like 30 yards of field position.
Oh,
scrambling
right
around and then just chucked it.
What a play.
And the guy was wide open. I'm going to give you wide open there.
He sort of pushes off.
Yeah.
I think it's Komet.
Yeah, I think it is. I don't think it was Loveland. Yeah. Then in overtime, there's a play where they weren't on the same page. Like Williams thought he was going to keep going or settle down, whichever of the two. He threw it where Moore wasn't. He stopped or kept going, whatever it was. And
no, he quits on the route.
Yeah, okay.
And maybe Williams was wrong, but Collinsworth was immediately to, what is he doing?
Mm.
Like just where is his head on this play? So that's one play. It's also, you know, in the end, the biggest play of the year. It's their last offensive play of the year. So it's always something with DJ Moore. Last offseason, it was a clip, and Ben Johnson was just getting there. So from the year before, where Williams is there already, he's a rookie, and he's trying to find something, and Moore appears to be so frustrated that he just walks off the field during the play. Remember that one?
Yes.
He's top of the screen.
Yes.
He just walks off the field.
Yes, I remember saying like that. That looked bad.
Poor Anthony Richardson, who can't get away with having an injury.
Right.
Here's this guy.
Well, he was tired, actually, is what Anthony Richardson
was. I'm just going to walk off.
He was tired.
I'm not getting the ball here. How about that move?
Right.
And, you know, for the most part, his career, people like him, but he's always kind of had that crutch that he's never had a good quarterback. And so, I don't know. It's risky to just be completely out on a guy who's as good as he is, but that's how I feel about him. I don't know if I want to deal with that. And that's also a trade, like I said.
Right.
Like Pittman.
Yeah.
Pittman, I think, that's Matt Harmon there again, and I mentioned this yesterday when Pittman's name came up. I've heard Matt, who is as knowledgeable, I think, as anybody at the wide receiver position, talk up Pittman, because his career started with kind of mixed results. I mean, the Colts have had a different quarterback every year. That might happen again, by the way, if Jones isn't ready. How many years in a row have they had a different week one starter? Like,
yeah, I feel like there's been a few years of, we don't really know how good Michael Pittman is yet.
Right. It goes back to Andrew Luck, I think, since they've had a repeat starter 1 year after the other. Like Pittman is like, what do we really know about him? But Matt likes him a lot, or at least he did a year or two ago. I doubt that's changed.
Right.
And so I feel maybe he can be, I'm open to that. I don't know what that costs. He's got a deal too.
He's got a contract. Yeah, the thinking goes that they might prefer, if they can find a way to offload that contract without killing themselves with dead money, they might rather pay Alec Pierce, who's about to become a free agent and is younger, and just make the commitment to him rather than let him walk for nothing. Commit to him if they can recoup some assets for Pittman. That's a win all around.
We talked about this last night on ADP Chasing. One of our guys, Jacob Sanderson, is a Colts fan, and he expects the Colts also to keep Pierce and then move on from Pittman somehow. It's funny, Alec Pierce was somebody last year that you just never saw drafted in fantasy. And then he went and really took off with Jones. So, these are some names.
Yep.
These are some names.
I do, like Chris Trapasso just said during the previous segment, I think he and I are pretty lined up on, you know, and he knows more about Brian Thomas Jr. as a prospect from the draft, of course, and looking at him play through these two seasons so far, where the results are very much a mixed bag. Even his rookie year, he ended up having a great year, but Chris mentioned it. It was Mac Jones who sort of got him unlocked. And so he never really has meshed with Trevor Lawrence, it seems, maybe. I don't know if that's overstating it maybe a little, but anyway, the thing that there's the ability that got him drafted in the first round, there's the speed, the size, like all of the athletic attributes. You're also buying a player only 2 years into his rookie contract, which if a team wants to offload that player, you're going to pay a premium for him because of the contract is so modest. I mean, he's a first-round pick, so it's not like he's making the league minimum. But still, you know, any of these guys, Pittman as an example, you want to talk about any other receiver, Marvin Harrison Jr. is also a draft pick, higher draft pick, but still modest rookie contract. But a DJ Moore, anybody who's established, Jalen Waddle, big contract, and I'm paying probably a somewhat of a decent price to acquire the player. Thomas does not come with the baggage of a big contract yet, and I like that about him. He's not even eligible for an extension until after his third season coming up. And that would work for me, because the Bills have got other holes to fill, and as much as I like going after – this came up late in the show yesterday – the merits of trying to find a stud or two for this team – instead of just using all your picks and hoping you hit on them and you've got value players all over your roster, you know, that hasn't worked out so far. The Bills don't have enough, to me, difference-making players. Thomas is a little bit of like, I'm playing both sides of that fence. You know, and I've got a first-round talent that has certainly flashed, but I'm not paying the freight yet. I don't have to pay the big contract yet. And that might really serve the Bills well if they can pull that off.
I guess for as long as that's going to be a somewhat realistic idea, it's time to dig more into what happened with him, you know? I mean, I feel like I just know basically what's on the surface level.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned talking to Mike Dempsey. He had, and what he said earlier during the season, just wasn't a fit, not a perfect player, you know, maybe he was overhyped. He did have the same yards per reception both years, Thomas, 14.7, but 1,200 yards to 700, 87 catches to 48, 10 touchdown receptions to 2, big drop-off in production. I wonder what Jacksonville will want to do. It's not out of the question to me that they would try to move this player.
If they can get a first-round pick for him,
they should take it.
If they've got other guys now, which they do. I mean, they've committed to Jacoby Myers. Parker Washington is an important piece of this. I don't know where his contract status is at, but he kind of became their best guy down the stretch. And even in the playoff game, like he was the guy that I was worried about, I think, when the Jacksonville offense was on the field. So if you're them, you might think you've got, you know, you can recoup a first-round pick that's awfully nice to have as an asset moving forward, and you've got two receivers you really like that have carved out roles already with your quarterback, with your coach, the system and all that. And if Thomas is kind of a, you know, round peg, square hole, vice versa, whatever, and you can get a first for him because his value is still that good, like maybe this is the time to do it. Because if you go through another year and he doesn't fit, and the other guys are getting more targets, and he catches 50 balls again for you, the first-round pick return probably sailed on you. So you might have to do it now. It's still close enough to the player he was when he was drafted, the prospect he was, and the good first year, even great first year. Maybe you can recoup that pick. But if you wait another year and it doesn't reestablish itself, then that's over.
Washington makes no money. Literally. He does not accept money.
Wow.
He plays for free. He plays for the love of the game. There was a story like last year where they offered him money. Like, look, we don't want you to be different around here.
Typical,
and he said no.
Typical media to not play that story up more.
I know. He decided to play for free. Now, there's something with him. He's theirs. Like, he's their property. But from SpotTrack, something called a proven performance escalator. So his money is like not official. I guess, but he'll move up a little bit from last year. And he ends up 58 catches for 847 and 5. Remember, he left the game against the Bills with a head injury, but he came back. It's the playoffs.
Yeah, right.
He was right back out there.
Not only did he leave with it, I mean, he...
It was weird.
He got hit his head, either off a helmet or on the ground, I don't remember which, got up and fell down.
Yeah, and then there was more to it even, I think. It was just sort of really strange.
Yeah, it looked like he was seriously hurt the way he reacted when he tried to get up and get off the field. And then he went away, and I think he even went to the room and then came back.
Oh, yeah. No, he left the game and returned and then caught a touchdown pass in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
That's how you do it. 803-0550, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Give us a call to talk about any of this if you like with us. This is WGR and 107.7 and 104.7 FM.
The out of pass for Keller, a defenseman. Nice move. Cuts to the net. Score! Megan Keller, the overtime hero. The United States gets gold to ball.
Great call from Kenny Albert. I like Kenny Albert. U.S. wins in women's hockey, the gold medal over Canada. Scored with 2 minutes left. Hillary Knight becoming the all-time leading scorer at the Olympics. And then also you get Megan Keller with the deke and the winner in overtime. A couple minutes into overtime to get the win. Men play today at 3:10. Good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. It's rainy out today, which I guess is good. And it's melting all that snow and all that ice. Taking the dog for a walk is not yet that easy, I'll say. Yesterday was sunny and warm enough to where, like, I was comfortable. But all the snow that's melting still is creating these mass puddles, like, in the middle of the sidewalk.
It's a problem.
It's like walking through a minefield of water. I can't.
Right.
I got to wear like muck boots outside now.
And just with the rain in general, like the 40 in rain, it's just not pleasant. Owen and I were walking to the driving range the other day, and I was like, what do we, like, now that we're actually at 40 in rain, do we prefer negative 15 real feel, or do we prefer 40 in rain?
That's
like, what would we rather have now that we're in the other?
Right. On the front end, like football season, I think I'd rather have the negative 15 in snow, but because it's just been beaten out of me for the last 2 months, I think I was excited to see 40 in rain at the beginning of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Now that it's here, I don't know, though.
Yeah, it doesn't feel great.
It wasn't great.
It's almost going to be 50 in rain today. It's going to be like 49 degrees.
You know, like really, I guess why I like it is because I know it's an exercise in getting us to spring.
Mm-hmm.
Like we need to go through this phase in order to get what comes out on the other side. I need to get the snow melted, and I need to get, you know, I need to get the mud process going. I need the mud to rise up through the snow so that it can start drying out. It's got to see the sun, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It can't start drying out until it gets some direct contact.
Right.
So I don't know.
Get those golf courses dried out.
48 days till the Masters. They got to get it. They got to get the mud phase done.
48 days until the Masters. See, that doesn't make me feel like spring is close though, because generally I feel like I'm not golfing yet by the time the Masters is here.
I agree.
It's like when you're
if it's still
like starting
48
barely.
Days away until I'm starting to think about it.
That's a problem.
Hmm.
That's a problem.
The Players is closer than that.
That's true.
Right? Players is next month.
Yeah, next month.
A couple of weeks. 803-0550 is the phone number. Some football today as well. I mentioned we'll have Carl Jones on coming up at 8 o'clock. And when we do, we'll get to a lot on not just the draft, because there's a lot to happen before the draft. The draft's in, you know, a little over 2 months still. But free agency is just a few weeks away. And there'll be trade conversations, I'm sure, all throughout the combine, is you're going to get GMs speaking and agents are going to be there leaking things. And hey, yesterday you had a little of this, right? AJ Brown dropping some hints. I mean, it was hard for him not to. He was asked directly about Mike Vrabel, someone that he has played under before, and what's he going to say? But he certainly didn't do anything to hide that he would want to go to New England. He said the quote, "We're all Patriots here," or something, right? We'll get some of the clips along the way. Like, that stuff's going to start happening. And Brown, by the way, like, there is an argument, I think, that you should want him because that's who New England's going to want. And how badly do you want to play that game? Blocking New England, if it's a position and a player that you would also want yourself. You're not going to block them just to block them, but A.J. Brown is the type of receiver and the level of receiver that I think this offense needs. I mean, I don't know how many people, though, he is the dream for. What's your dream idea? How many people are saying A.J. Brown? Because there are going to be what-ifs with everybody. But with him, it is, I don't know how much he's got left in the tank, how well he is going to age playing the type of way that he does at the position. But he is still only 28, so he should have a couple more years at that. The contract's not a bad thing for him because it's only going to cost him this bill or any team that trades for him like $7 million. The price that you're giving up, though, to Philly will likely be more because they're the ones that have to eat all the money. And that's going to cause them to have to take on a big number. What's the best idea here? Is it Trey Hendrickson? Is it Max Crosby? Is it Brown? Is it Brian Thomas Jr.? Is it Buda Baker, who's a star safety that is maybe available in Arizona? It depends what they want to do, but that's going to be a bit of a what-if with all these guys right now. Like, how available are they really? These are all names, though, that you could reasonably get to. That guy could be traded. What's the best idea? If the Bills make one big swing on a veteran player, not anything pertaining to the draft, what is the right big swing? They have not really made one since they signed Von Miller. And the Bills signed Von Miller a long time ago. That was 4 years ago now that the Bills signed Von Miller. And since then, what's the biggest move they've made on a veteran player? Is it, I was going to say Bosa. That's a one-year, third-rate contract at his position. I mean, that can't be the answer. What is the biggest thing they've done in that time? Because I'm not sure there really is a good answer to it. I think there's got to be an appetite from Brandon Bean and from the entire Bills organization to do something like that this offseason. They probably can only do won, though. Like, New England, they can, if they wanted to, and they can pull it off, they have the room likely to do two or three of these. They could trade for A.J. Brown, and if they also want to be in the Trey Hendrickson game in free agency, they could probably do that too. The Bills, they probably have to pick one and go for it. And what is that one idea that they should pick? I am open to different ideas right now, but I'll tell you where I'm laying out. Larry, we'll get to your call and more phone calls at 803-0550 on what's the best idea. I think right now my two favorite ideas at two different positions are the Trey Hendrickson idea in free agency and the Brian Thomas Jr. idea in the trade market. Hendrickson is not the complete player that Max Crosby is. I just think they got to stop focusing on the all-around nature of what a defensive end is going to be able to do for you. It's not a bad thing to have those traits, but I think one thing I'm hoping is different about a Jim Leonard defense versus what was true of a Sean McDermott defense is the Sean McDermott defense at that position, at defensive line and at the edge, there was a need to be able to do it all. You got to be good at setting the edge. You got to be responsible in your rush lanes and your lanes when you're defending the run. And I'm hoping that under Jim Leonard, it's more let them loose, hell raising, pass rush, go get the quarterback at all costs. It almost kind of, to make a hockey comparable, it's like when Dahlin is on this team under Ralph Kruger, how is he asked to play? He's basically stapled to the blue line, and you don't go below the faceoff circle. You don't move between these two spots. You stay here, you stay there, because we need you to be sure that you are back and that you are being responsible in your own end. And that limited him as a player a lot. What did Don Granato come in to do? Go wherever you want. You want to take a chance and go down into the corner? You want to take a chance and go down into the slot? Go ahead. Do it. Go take chances. Make mistakes. Be willing to make a couple of mistakes, because the reward is hopefully going to be enough to overcome that. And that is the same type of mentality that I'm hoping they approach at defensive end. If you do that, I think Hendrickson is your guy. The difference between Crosby and Hendrickson might just be that Crosby is a better all-around player, defending the run, setting the edge, you know, not getting beat by running quarterbacks and rush lanes. Hendrickson, I feel like, is more of the he might be lacking in a lot of those areas, but tell you what, a lot of those pressure numbers, pass rush win rate, sacks, you just want to go straight up sacks. This guy is giving you more than Max Crosby is, and you don't have to trade draft capital to get him. Either guy is going to cost you a lot of money on the cap and probably going to take up most of the money you have available this offseason. But one guy is going to cost you minimum a first-round pick. The other guy is not. And would I rather have Trey Hendrickson, who is a big splash at a position of need, star player, has led the league in sacks for multiple years, and use my first round pick on whoever you want? Casey Concepcion, you want to do that? You get him and Hendrickson, or you just get Crosby. Like, to me, that's an easy one. And on offense, like, to me, it's Thomas. I want to buy low on Brian Thomas. I want to see if I can get him for a second round pick and something else of good value. I think that he is gettable. I don't think he's as gettable as he probably was 2 weeks ago, because the Jaguars seem to have decided that Travis Hunter's going to play more corner. But for Thomas, it's the explosion that he has. It is the rookie season that he had and what he was as a prospect. And to me, you pair him with Josh Allen, and you would hope that that is going to be what he needs to get back to the 1,300-yard receiver, 10-touchdown guy that he was 2 years ago. And for him, it's also age for me. It's contract control. It's I can pair a Brian Thomas trade because he doesn't cost a lot on the cap with a Trey Hendrickson move. Honestly, like, I guess I'm kind of cheating here, right? Like, I'm saying my dream idea is both of them because I think they're maybe two of the only ideas I could pair together that work. If I trade for Max Crosby, I'm not going and getting Brian Thomas also because of the draft capital that it's probably going to cost. If I trade for Brian Thomas, I'm probably not also trading for, you know, A.J. Brown. I like the idea of both of them. It's going to be really hard to execute, but I think Thomas is my number one idea on offense and Hendrickson on defense. But for you, it could be Baker, it could be Crosby, it could be Brown, it could be somebody that I'm not mentioning here. Let me know what you think. 803-0550, let's go to Larry in South Florida. What's up, Larry?
Hey, good morning, guys. Just quick little side note. I walked my dog this morning, Joe, and I didn't really have any ice or snow to worry about, so it wasn't
nice.
Too bad.
What is it, 75 minimum?
It's a little chilly, 72 this morning, but, you know, we're dealing with it. And I am golfing later this afternoon. So
this guy.
I stink, though, Joe. You guys are actually good. So you said dream big, and I love your idea. I love Brian Thomas. I love A.J. Brown, and I love Hendrickson. But you said dream big, so I'm going to go really big.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, I watched the YouTube Chris Trapasso, his restructuring of contracts, who you would target in free agency. I loved his defensive selections, and I love the idea of Romeo Dobbs. And I've always loved A.J. Brown. I think Brian Thomas is great, and to get either one of those guys would be a dream scenario. However, I want to keep the idea of getting Dobbs in a couple of the safety, and it was a linebacker and even a rush defensive edge. He said we could get in free agency after all the restructuring. But my big dream is to take this year's number one, not 27s, but 28s, and it might even take a little bit more than that, some later round picks. Go get Justin Jefferson. Mm-hmm. And then if you get Jefferson, Dobbs, and then you keep Shakir and maybe get a late round, middle round receiver, you're set.
Yeah.
And not only did you get the number one, but you got all the accompanying pieces so we can finally say, here you go, Josh. You can now compete with Cincinnati's receivers. You can compete with Dallas's receivers. And now this is your time to shine. If they do the restructuring, the amount of money freed up, they can afford to make this move. Would I love to get a Hendrickson? Yes. More than a Crosby, like you said? Yes. However, think about last year, all we did is spend money and time and energy on our defense. And as a matter of fact, that's all we really have done. That year that we drafted Rousseau in the first round and then Boogie Basham in the second round, I wanted to smash my head into the wall. I could not believe that we still ignored wide receiver when we had a need back then to at least get a second receiver. Here is our time. We now have an offensive coordinator who's now our head coach. We have an aggressive defensive coordinator. We brought in who's the guy they just brought in? Fox?
John Fox.
Who I think is a smart move, just, you know, for to have some, you know, a veteran for advice and someone to lean on. But to go after Jefferson, who's already said he would love to be with our head coach.
Yep. Hey, Larry, sorry, I gotta cut off here because I gotta get to a break. But I want to talk about Jefferson when we come back. That is you said big idea. That's the biggest idea, I think. And I'll tell you where I stand on Jefferson as a concept right now when we come back. Here on WGR, also now, of course, on 107.7 and 104.7 WGR FM.
Albert pass for Keller, a defenseman. Nice move. Cuts to the net. Score!
Kenny Albert for NBC. I'm a big Kenny Albert fan. I wish his level would have been a touch higher. Not his enthusiasm, but his just turn him up a tiny bit. I mean, unforgettable moment. That will be a goal that, I mean, that's going to be the advertisement for this program for, I mean.
For sure.
Yeah. Many, many years.
Yep.
Just a tremendous play. And game and tournament, And, you know, whatever it's called before that, they came through Buffalo in one of their, I think, four exhibition games between U.S. and Canada. Mm-hmm. I was down right behind the Team Canada bench with my family for that game, and USA blitzed them. And then, you know, my wife knew more about it than I did at the time. The next game in the series might have been in Cleveland. I'm not sure of that.
I believe that's right.
One of the stars of the team is from Cleveland, I think Edwards, if I'm right about that. I hope I am. And so we were watching this game, and I just, you know, always, I know this much, that Canada usually wins this gold medal. But I just went to a game where U.S. was, like, superior.
Yep.
And that game ended 10-4. USA beat Canada in that game after the game in Buffalo, I think it was.
Yeah.
By that score, like, wow, maybe it's different now.
I know. I remember when you first, I knew you had been at that game, and we knew the result of that Cleveland game, and I was mistaken and thought like maybe Canada didn't have everyone or something, but that was wrong. I dug in and like did some research and looked up game stories and how their coach was even talking, and like that was their team, and the way this tournament began, even it still kind of looked like that. And this game today was a very different game. I mean, credit to Canada. They dug in and found a way to make this game much more competitive than any other game the U.S. women have played maybe all year. I mean, I haven't kept track of their whole itinerary before these games. I know about this game here and then the game in Cleveland.
They won them
around
all.
It.
They won them all.
Okay. So, and they were just steamrolling. They hadn't given up a goal. They gave up one goal in this tournament before today.
Yeah.
So they went through the whole tournament only giving up two, which is incredible, and they still needed overtime to win the gold medal game. So credit to Canada for showing up like they did and making it so hard on them. That's a proud bunch of hockey players, obviously a proud hockey country, and they're used to winning this tournament. So they don't always win it. The U.S. did beat them in 98, and then again another year there. I don't remember, maybe 18 even, if I have it right. But Canada's been, you know, the dominant team in this tournament year over year. And even world championships, it's kind of back and forth. But Canada's been, you know, not surprisingly. But it seemed like the U.S. infused more youth and skill into their lineup this cycle. And Canada was still more veteran. And, you know, those veterans dug in and made it hard today. But U.S. found their way.
Tying the game with the net empty and then winning in overtime on a 3-on-3 goal. Really great. Let's go to Dane here. Hi, Dane.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to talk about the possibility of a Brian Thomas Jr. trade. Obviously, his first year, he looked phenomenal, like one of the most explosive receivers in the league. We all know he regressed quite significantly this year. You know, I've heard a number of possible explanations for that, one being a potential wrist injury he was dealing with, others just being, you know, a loss of confidence, hesitance to catch the ball over the middle of the field. Whatever it may be, if you can identify that, and I don't know if you could, if you feel like there's something that you can fix with coaching or whether it be extra rest with his health, I love the idea of the Bills trying to get him. Primarily because it's cheap. I love it so much more compared to an idea like Alec Pierce or A.J. Brown. He's young, he's cheap, and he's shown he has that potential to be a game-breaking player. You know, I'm also excited by guys like Concepcion after Cody Carpentier talking about him. And who knows, maybe Romeo Doubs. But as it stands now, Brian Thomas Jr., as far as a trade goes, is, you know, my favorite idea, without a doubt. Just wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on that.
Well, I'm 100% with you. I've been saying it for a few days now, and I really like settled in yesterday on it that the cost is, I mean, you're going to pay, it's going to cost you a first round pick, and maybe more. I don't know. Bill Barnwell was speculating Coleman and a one for a fifth and Brian Thomas Jr. And I don't know if that's exactly right or what, but it's probably in the ballpark. And yes, I think while he's not as established as some other players that are making $25 or $30 million a year, you do have, if you believe in the guy's talent, you can go back to when you scouted him even. It's not that long ago. It's only two draft cycles ago now that you were, or three, excuse me, looking at this player. And the Bills were in the receiver market that year. So I'm sure they did a lot of work on Brian Thomas Jr. I don't know where he rated on their board, but if they liked him and can get him now, I mean, I'm all for it because he's only going into year three. So that's year three of a first round picks rookie contract, which means I get year four and I've got a fifth year option. A lot of times you make a trade for an established big name receiver, even if they've got a contract, he's going to show up and you're going to give him a new one. It's just like a part of the deal. You probably don't pay as much in assets to get that player because of the cost of, you're taking that contract off a team's hands, which is why you would expect to pay, I think, a one for Brian Thomas Jr. But I like it. I think the cost is great. I mean, and if he smashes in year one with you after year three of his rookie deal and you want to do a deal with him, okay, fine. But you don't have to. You basically can try him on for a couple of years, and then even the fifth-year option is there if you want it. I think that is pretty good, considering that you're in the situation you are with all these holes to fill on this roster and a very tight salary cap situation. Someone tell me again about how great a job Brandon Bean has done building this team. Please. They're in cap jail. They got a bunch of holes. They have very few great difference-making players on the team. But sure, make him president. All right. Good. Sounds good to me.
I think maybe the only person doing that is the owner of the team.
Right. I don't get it. Anyway, I think you gotta make some choices.
I think, not to argue with you on that overall point, but I mean, they have been in win-now mode for 5 years, and there are sacrifices when it's harder, I think, to stay there, and you don't maybe, if you're the type of GM scout, there's scouting in your blood, you want youth, you want to put your acumen to the test in the draft, but while they did make many draft picks, and not all have worked out, of course, there's still, that the free agent money at Von Miller and, veterans to take up spots where you're not developing guys that way. Your emphasis is on winning this year, and that's been true for 5 or 6 years. And I wonder if this year is going to be different in his mind for that. I mean, it's not going to be taking a step back per se, but this is how you almost have to get younger, is by flushing a lot of the, most of those UFAs are guys that have been in the league a long time. That's how you get to be a UFA. And Thomas is like almost middling it. I mean, he's 23.
Mm-hmm.
It's close. It is 2 years ago. I mean, it is recent enough where you can ask yourself if you would want to use that pick 26 on him. And, maybe that's pretty close to a good price, depending on what Jacksonville wants to do. I haven't decided yet. I'm open to it. I'm open to this Brian Thomas idea because you have to respect the rookie season he had, but it did go the other way hard in year two. And I just don't know that I've heard enough complimentary about him for me to want to basically wash that away.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that just from what I leaned on at that, in the draft that year, 2 years ago, I didn't want him because yards per route run? He had a certain, just like A.D. Mitchell. There were stats that were not good predictively for players going into the NFL. And then he went and had, a great rookie season. And we said, what? Maybe consider that he played at LSU and was it neighbors on that team too.
Right.
And maybe we make an exception next time for a guy that also has a great prospect at the same position, on the same team.
Yep.
Well,
yeah, it's not a perfect idea because there, look, there's going to be risk anywhere, and you might incur more risk, right? If you have the money and you don't have to pay the premium to get the player with the contract, if you can fit it in, that's a more proven player that's got a more proven track record that you should be able to trust and lean on, and you don't have to pay the premium asset. that might be more desirable. I just don't know if they can make that work. You know, if they can make the money work. Because I look, I'm all for getting the most proven guy I can. You said you maybe you can tell. I'm reacting to the word middling it because but that is kind of what it is. I might have even referenced something along those lines here when I was laying out my case for it. It's not going all the way to an established guy. It's not a proven number one. It's a guy that, if you're right, can be that for you and at a bargain, and maybe that's too good to be true, you know? But the cost of acquiring them is going to cost you what? You know, a starting safety or a starting guard or a starting edge player that you also need. So there's all kinds of ways to do it, you know? But the money being what it is with Thomas Jr., I find appealing because I suspect that it would be appealing to the Bills.
Thanks for the call, Dane. It's a thought-provoking idea. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog here, 803-0550. If you want to jump in, this is WGR and 107.7 and 104.7 WGR FM.
I don't see it with the Buffalo Bills. I don't think that they make that hire with Joe Brady. Coaching wasn't the issue. The left tackle and right tackle spots being a revolving door because of injury was an issue. I would expect that the health factor there, it won't be as big of a problem as it was a year ago. And we know that they have to swing big this year in free agency. They've got to go after a big trade like an A.J. Brown. They've got to go after it. And heck, Mike Evans just announced that he's open to being a free agent. Maybe you go try to throw a bag at him and see if he wants to come up to finish up his career in Buffalo on a championship contender. I think the Bills will be fine.
Courtney Cronin. What's the name of that show? Sorry.
Unsportsmanlike.
Unsportsmanlike. That sounded very sportsmanlike. Yeah. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Happy Thursday. It's slippery out there. Be prepared. Temperature is 30 degrees, and maybe you've seen it, maybe not, but the icy conditions. Lots of freezing rain, runoff from snowmelt. Surfaces have become icy. It's parking lots, roads, mm-hmm. driveways, sidewalks. Be prepared to, to get surprised,
because
I did this morning. I didn't go down.
Did you like do the like two, three steps like in cartoons when they're slipping?
I had like a one step, only
one step.
The first one,
and you caught yourself.
I caught myself. Yeah, one step, one flip.
I don't know that I've ever fallen on ice, like a full fall.
Yeah,
is that normal?
I fell
like a hard fall.
I fell so hard
sure,
last year.
I slipped
last
down
year.
To like a knee, but.
I fell so hard last year that I went down. And when I landed, I very luckily like kept my head up from hitting the ice.
Yeah.
And it was such a hard fall that the next day, the next 2 days, my neck was very sore from the jolt of holding my head off the ice.
Yeah.
It could have been bad.
Yeah.
So don't fall. Try not to fall. As best you can. 803-0550. All right. On free agency, a couple things. Mentioned Pete Prisco's top 100 NFL free agents. We're going to talk about Alec Pierce as an idea and maybe Michael Pittman as well coming up at 8:30. We've got Derek Schultz, who covers the Colts, to join us. Like, Pierce might hit free agency. I don't think he's going to get franchise tagged. And Pittman could be a cap casualty. The Colts are kind of holding some of the cards here on what they're going to do. I can't imagine they would lose both, but I guess it's possible. If they lose Pierce because he goes and signs somewhere, maybe they're going to then restructure Pittman. They don't have to get rid of Pittman at all, and they could save like $19 million on a restructure. So we'll talk about that with Derek Schultz coming up at the bottom of the hour. Elsewhere in free agency, I saw Rashid Shaheed says he'd love to be back in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Evans, just heard there from Courtney Cronin, said to be hitting the market. There's Romeo Doubs. If you want to go the free agent route, and just, you know, spend some money there, there will be ideas. There will be options on who they can chase after. I don't know if you'll have anyone you like more than the others. There'll be different levels of commitment, different levels of, you know, whether it's dollars or term. There's roles, too, right? Like, if Josh Palmer and Keon Coleman are still here, both, which Palmer I think will, do they want somebody that does it all? And is that more likely to be in the draft? Do they want an upgraded version of Brandon Cooks? Do they want Brandon Cooks? I think it's kind of a there are not a lot of spots there for them to fill, and they got to be choosy. No.
Well, the thing they need the most, and that's why I haven't really landed on a favorite idea in free agency, is because I don't know if there's anyone that will become available like this. The thing they need for the most snaps to fill, the most targets maybe too, but especially snaps, is one specific type of receiver. It's the big-bodied X receiver. Because right now, what you're walking into, or what you're transitioning from, is that position being occupied mostly by Keon Coleman, who you might not feel like you can invest a high level of trust in, right, at the moment, and that is putting it lightly. Who knows if he's even on the team? Maybe they do still end up trading him for something or cutting him. So I've got Coleman, can't trust him. I've got Shavers and Davis that played that position last year, both on the injury shelf. Mm-hmm. Probably not playing this year, or at least not playing at the start of the year. And those are the three guys. They played that position, that specific type of role on this offense. And I don't know that any of them will be on the field for you at the beginning of the season. And we've talked about how that role is important to a Sean Payton type of offense. And that's been Courtland Sutton, that's been Michael Thomas. Who's that guy right now on this Bills roster? I don't think they have it. I don't think that's Josh Palmer, right? And Josh Palmer at his best, I don't think is playing that type of role for you at wide receiver. I think we know Khalil Shakir is not playing that type of role for you. And they might even think, well, we think Coleman is going to have a comeback here. But you wouldn't put all the balls in that basket again, all the eggs in that basket going into this year.
I was uncomfortable, and we kind of said this at last year's draft, going in and just counting on Keon Coleman to be good this past season was a gamble.
Right.
And that gamble did not pay off. To do that this year would be
malpractice. I mean, you can't do that this year.
Right.
Maybe you can have him on the team.
Right. If it goes well, great, but that can't be even your plan C, really. It's got to be last resort on some level.
Right.
He doesn't have to be cut, but you cannot be counting on that to turn around.
So at minimum, that is one spot on the offense, one specific position that they have to fill. They don't have a guy on the roster that plays that role at the moment.
To that exact point, and we'll get some calls in here, and we've talked a lot about defensive free agents. I've got the top 100 free agents. There are a lot of defensive names on this board. Trey Hendrickson is near the top. Jalen Phillips. And we've got some...
Yeah.
The Athletic has some projected salaries I want to get to as well. But the last two off seasons, what have they done? They have signed a guy before the draft. And that's Palmer last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 years ago, both Mac Hollins and
Samuel.
Curtis Samuel.
Yep.
So they have done their middle class hunt at the position in free agency the last 2 years. I don't think that there's any doubt they will do some of that. I guess the million-dollar question will be, if it goes the way it's gone the last couple of years, they will have an opportunity to make a move at this position, and then when it happens, people will say to me, well, now they're not going to draft one. And in the last couple of years, that has been, well, with Coleman, that wasn't correct. They did draft Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
And last year when they signed Palmer, I thought, like, well, that's probably not enough. They'll probably get one somewhere, third mm-hmm. round, fourth round. Like, just, you know, keep the pipeline moving. So, we'll see. Like, you just kind of laid out how many guys could still be here. And if they sign Mike Evans or if they trade for an A.J. Mm-hmm. Brown, as Courtney Cronin suggests there, like, That'll push the idea of receiver in the first round for a lot of people way down the board. I'm not going to put my two biggest moves into that position. I've got a defense that mm-hmm. needs bodies. There's no doubt about it. So we'll see. But the last couple off seasons, they have not neglected the position in this spot. That's also Deonte Hardy. That's Trent Sherfield.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have gone out to get guys early in free agency or at this spot that we've immediately thought, like, oh, okay, well, that guy's going to go in the room. Now just draft one, and it's the mm-hmm. second part of that has, you know, been lacking, except in the case of Coleman, where they did draft one.
All right. Names that are available at that type of receiver that I'm talking about, by the way, like you mentioned the two. The two at the top of the list that fit that to a T are A.J. Brown and Mike Evans. Like, those are your big-bodied ex-receivers that are going to play there, because that's not fully, I don't think, Alec Pierce. We could talk about that in a little bit, but like, that's been more Pittman, I think, in Indy. That's not, you know, someone called about Tyreek Hill. That's not Tyreek Hill. That's not Rashid Shaheed, right? Maybe it's Romeo Doubs, who we talked about off air yesterday. Maybe he's that type of receiver that fits for them on
right.
that.
It all depends,
it's
right?
It's not Christian Kirk.
How much they want that player to be the weapon versus the Joe Brady routes. And this is a good point.
And all the dirty stuff.
This is a good point on Alec Pierce. So I was watching Matt Harmon yesterday of Reception Perception talk about how in his first couple seasons, what was Alec Pierce? He was the Joe Brady route. You're just running cardio.
Yeah,
you're not really a guy. You're running cardio. And then they actually started to hit him on those, and he did develop more of a game and more of his route tree, started running dig routes and being a part of the Colts offense. Any idea that Alec Pierce is super interesting for any team right now? Because he is among the best vertical receivers in football. Mm-hmm. His average, his yards per reception is big.
He's led the league 2 years in a row in yards per reception.
The Bills in no world can pay Alec Pierce $25 million to run clear outs.
Right.
There's no team in the league that should look at what he's done in Indy and say, oh, yeah, most of the time he was just effectively clearing things. You just don't pay to clear out. You pay to throw him the ball. You pay him because you think he's going to hit for touchdowns. And that's what I wonder about. This team has treated that position out there like it's just occasionally we're going to hit him, but a lot of times I need somebody to run my Joe Brady routes.
Right.
Right? Like Brady called them those routes, love of the game routes. That's Shavers running that at a practice in training camp and Brady calling out like, oh, you're running one of these Joe Brady routes. Like a lot of offenses have this. You just... Pierce is going to be so interesting for money because whoever signs him, this might be more of a fantasy football point, Joe, for like the fantasy community.
Yep.
Whoever signs him, are they going to give him the ball a lot more than maybe you would have expected because now we've paid him.
Right.
We have to throw to him as opposed to on a rookie contract, hey, go run 6 miles today and that helps the team.
Well, and he's a very unique type of player because he doesn't get the ball thrown his way that often, but it's still... At the end of the day, looks good. Like last year, he had 84 targets on the year. 84 targets, 47 catches. How does that sound? Before I give you anything else, like for a $25 million receiver,
it sounds like
what are you doing?
It's an absolute no go.
Right, but he had 1,000 yards.
Right,
because he had 21 yards per reception, which led the NFL. Because all he does is catch the ball down the field. So I guess that would be a question for whoever signs him is, in Indy, kind of a one-trick pony. The one trick was great, though. He was great down the field, led the league 2 years in a row, but only 84 targets. Are you okay only throwing him the ball 84 times
for $25 million?
Because generally that's a guy that you're talking about throwing the ball to 100-plus times where, hey, it's not just my 60-yard bombs every other week that he's catching, but I got a 3rd and 7, and I need you to make the big play for 9 yards because that has not been him.
Yeah.
That's been Pittman, and then last year it was Tyler Warren before it was him.
So real quick, we'll get some phone calls in here. I've got some projected salaries, and I saw Nate tweeting yesterday also about Jalen Phillips, who the Eagles traded for, and he has not yet signed there. He's a free agent as well. Like projected salaries. Sometimes I wonder if there's a lot of value in this, and other times I think, like, does anybody care about the cap anyway? Like Boye Mafe, who is the Seahawks linebacker who might get a big contract, 4 years, 73. Adafe Owe of the Chargers, 4 years, 88. Jalen Phillips is 4 years, $98 million projected.
Really?
Yeah. Like the positions, you just got to accept you're paying such big money. It's why the Bills, smartly a couple years ago, when they drafted Rousseau and Basham. I mean, yes, I thought it was overdoing it at the position, but the justification was not hard to find. You pay so much money for defensive ends. It's unbelievable. It's just like receiver. You want middle-tier guys, you're paying big, big money. The idea that Joey Bosa on a one-year deal off of the year he just put is going to be like 12 again. Right? John Franklin Myers, that's a name here. 3 years, 54. He's the Broncos defensive lineman who, I mean, immediately I'm seeing a Broncos connection. I'm thinking, I wonder if Jim Leonard thinks that's perfect for what he wants to do up front. So those are some of the prices that the Athletic had put out there. Defense, offense, special teams. You want a kicker?
You know what makes more sense maybe to bring back than Bosa? If I'm talking one-year deals for like that
Did
amount
you say
of money,
Vaughn. If you want,
Vaughn has experience in this type of defense, I think, from Denver. And last year, he was more productive than Bosa was, wasn't he?
I wonder if he'd be open to it.
He had 9 sacks. I don't know what his pressure numbers look like, but he had more sacks.
Buff in Dallas is up. Hey, Buff. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Happy Thursday, guys.
Yeah, to you too.
For me, when I look at this wide receiver, a free agent class, it doesn't make any sense to try to sign somebody to make a big splash. If I'm Brandon, I'll do it through the draft. And I know you like Pittman a lot, and then you guys say you need a big X at that receiver position. I don't think so. I know you like, you know, receivers going to block, but, I mean, you look at the draft, these guys can get it done. You don't need a big guy. For me, Pittman, and he's had his time. I mean, he had a few good games last season, and he's injury-prone. He's almost like just a faster and maybe a stronger Gabe Davis to me, honestly. I want to get your opinion on it, Jeremy.
Well, on Pittman, I mean, he's always been much better at beating man coverage than Gabe Davis, and he beats press coverage. He's been much, much better at that. The problem you run into, and Buff, I'm with you like on something you say here, which is everybody, every idea. This is true of every position. This is what free agency is. And, you know, you can build in free agency and you can succeed in free agency. What is it? It's covering up the holes that your draft has left. We've drafted all this. What do we have the year after? Like, all right, well, we're losing this guy. We're losing this guy. We're losing this guy. We don't have a proper pipeline at these positions. And free agency, who's available? Guys that have had injuries, guys that are 29. You're not going to get a 23-year-old, never hurt receiver that fits perfectly. Where do you get that guy? In the first round, like, of the draft. And even those guys have injury history. So, you know, you could talk yourself out of anybody if you're going injury history. Has Mike Evans got an injury history? He never did. Now he does.
Yeah.
Eventually, everybody's going to get hurt. And Pittman, is he the greatest idea? Oh, maybe not. He is very, very, very good. Has been very good. How long can that last? The Bills, I mean, if Amari Cooper scared you off, if you know, every one of these moves, like, along the way where I've said this before a couple times. It's specific of a lot of the things the Bills do with free agency. They've had to kind of turn over every stone. Mm-hmm. And when a guy comes here, especially at receiver, usually that guy is near the end and almost done. That was Amari Cooper. That's I don't know if it's Gabe Davis this time. It's John Brown and Cole Beasley both came back because they're almost done. And, you know, the only guy to really leave and still play is Diggs. Nobody else leaves this receiver room for greener pastures because they use up everything they've got here, or they get guys that are near the end. And that might be Pittman. That might be Evans. But anybody that has done the job and that can do the job, like, put it this way. If they got what Bosa was at receiver, what's that look like? Amari Cooper?
Yeah.
You had some production.
Yep.
He used to be great. He still has some ability, but ultimately you're going to, you know, the clock's going to strike midnight. You're going to say, like, all right, we got to do it again.
Yep.
It's one of the reasons where if they do decide to go out and sign like Romeo Doubs or who AJ Brown or Mike Evans, what will we be doing next year this time?
Probably the same thing.
Draft one.
Right.
And there's a point to be made there where, like, we're kind of all living in two different timelines. One of the timelines is, what do they do to win the Super Bowl this year? Because it's about getting through the playoff wall. And then the other one is, what can they do to set them up for having a great player for 4 to 5 years, right? If they were to draft a receiver at 27, I would be thinking about what he does for the team this year and then how that receiver shapes the room for the next 5 to 6 to 7, depending on who that player is. They draft Jordan Tyson because they move up and get him because he falls because of injury concerns. Mm-hmm. Like, boom, I might have reset my room for 7 to 8 years. They sign Mike Evans. I'm like, all right, I hope he can contribute now. So a lot of roads to take. This is true of defensive end. This is true of linebacker. A lot of mock drafts. You'll see linebacker C.J. Allen. You'll see, you know, a bunch of different defensive pieces. Safety. All right. I like a lot of ideas. It's, you know, we're kind of at the beginning, looking at the roadmap, and there are a bunch of different ways to go to get there. to where they're going to go.
You ideally want someone that can have a long-term 4-5 year relationship this offense and with Josh Allen.
That's where Waddle is an idea. Where, for me, Olave is the dream.
That's where I don't think free agency really has that answer maybe Pierce, just because he's young enough. But like I said, I'm not that confident in that. I think that more of it would be you draft that guy, and then it's maybe beyond 5 years. If you hit on it, maybe it's 10. Yeah. Maybe it's the rest of Allen's career if you hit on that pick. And right, if you're trading for Waddle, Olave, that should be, I got this guy for 5 years. Like that, this is the rest of Allen's prime. Are they getting a receiver that's going to just be win it this year, or do they find someone this offseason that, like, this guy's with Josh the rest of the way? Not the rest of the way total, the rest of his prime. Take him to 35 years old.
Right, because this time next year, we'll see what Josh Palmer does for them in this offense this year. But next year, they will save about $5 million by cutting Josh Palmer. You think they're going to do that?
I think they'll probably want to do that.
He'll be 28 years old. I mean, like, you might end up doing that. Mario in Jacksonville. Hey, Mario.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Hey, yeah. I think Alec Pierce seems like, I mean, that's by far the best fit. I mean, his numbers are kind of really impressive, not to knock Daniel Jones too much, but considering he put up over 1,000 yards on 47 catches with Daniel Jones, just shows his ability to separate downfield. And what is he, like 26 years old, 25? You up his catches by 15 even, his targets by 15, I think he can give you 1,200 yards and 8 touchdowns, which is huge improvement for this offense. But I think the real question we got to ask is, you keep hearing about the philosophy change on defense. Do we know if there's going to be a philosophy change on offense? We referenced the Joe Brady receivers, the routes. So my concern is, if I bring a guy like Alec Pierce in, on paper, that looks great, but are we actually going to utilize him? Is the offensive philosophy going to change? That's what I'm most concerned about. So I want to get your guys' opinions on that, whether you think that's something that's going to happen. But also, you know, Mike Evans has been talked about a lot, and he's, 32, coming off pretty significant injury, and people are complaining that long-term that might not be the best fit. But are we really going to complain if we get Mike Evans and we get a Super Bowl going all in on some veteran guys, and then maybe we have to go 2 or 3 years where we're quote-unquote rebuilding? I don't think any Bills fan is really going to complain. So if that's the route they went and it worked, I'm all for that as well. So I'll hang up and listen. Just want to get your guys' take.
Thanks, Mario. My prediction on Evans would be this. If the Bills were to sign Mike Evans, it would be wildly celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be among those celebrating. Like, just I hope it works, but I mean, that guy is amazing. He has always been amazing. He's great. He's, to call him, like, sometimes people call him a, you know, like a big body jump ball guy, and get him in there with Keon Coleman. Like, he is so different than Coleman. Mike Evans has been getting open his whole career. He gets open. He beats dudes. He beats press. He beats guys. Yep. The injuries are going to be a concern. Like, we just kind of went through it there. Like, every injury is going to be a concern. On your question about, like, the Joe Brady offense, I think he's told us that it's his offense. I mean, the screens are going to stay. They have a role. He kind of explained what they do. I think that makes sense to keep them as part of the game. Once you see some screens with also the ability to, you know, move the ball down the field and do a little bit more here and there, like, I think you'll just be okay with them mixed in. It's when, you know, it's 3rd and 10. And I don't have anybody that can get open down the field more than 12 yards. So, like, I got to throw a screen here to get it to fourth and manageable where I can, you know, throw short of the sticks again. The Bills led the league in throwing short of the sticks on third down by a lot.
Right.
By a lot. And, again, that can work. That was good. I think the Brady offense is probably, you know, is it going to go through some changes? Sure. And now if they get a guy they can scheme – or they can not even scheme open. Forget scheme open. That's something else. Like, what do they need? A guy that doesn't need scheme. A guy's like, it's one-on-one. Cooked. All right. I did no scheming there. On the Colts, next, Derek Schultz.
The dynamism level of tackle breaking between Mekhi Lemon and Casey Concepcion, I see more outside play from Concepcion. And my literal comp for Casey Concepcion was none other than Stephon Diggs. It's a guy that fits that mold, and that tree of comps for me is the Zay Flowers, Stephon Diggs, Antonio Brown. That's kind of that tree where it's a guy that's thought of as a slot but has the new age alpha is what I call him, whether it's the Malik Nabers, the Jamar Chase, the Antonio Browns, the Stephon Diggs, that whole realm of these new age guys. And that's a lot of what Concepcion brings to the table and why I've vaulted him ahead.
That is Cody Carpentier from yesterday with Shope and the Bulldog talking about a name many Bills fans are going to get very acquainted with next week. That is Texas A&M wide receiver KC Concepcion. You heard there, Cody's comparison for him is Stephon Diggs. I think that's a fair comparison, you know, about 5'10", 5'11", 190, very much a shifty route runner. That his big positive to this point that I've been able to read and to a certain extent see has been that he gets open quick. He's not necessarily going to be this long strider that just is burning people down the field, but he is going to get open quick in space and you let him go. His big issue, though, and I have already seen some Bills fans bring it up and why they don't want him, and I'm going to push against it a little bit, but I can understand being worried about it, his drop issues. He is around 9 to 11% drop percentage.
Mm-hmm.
He had 7 last year. He's had 19 total the last 2 years. Against 186 career receptions. This is probably why he's available around 26. This is probably why he's available in the late first round. I've heard most people can describe them as concentration drops. It's not necessarily that he just hands. It's more he's turning up field too soon, takes his eye off the ball and drops it. It's not all, but he is a fun idea for the Bills.
And that's something you can coach out of someone, though, too.
If it's concentration,
you can drill that out of someone with enough time on task, maybe 4 years worth of a rookie contract before you get to the fifth-year option, maybe?
This is going to be something I maybe want to do this weekend when I have more time. But, we did this a few years ago with very specific stats. Like, if this guy fell into, top five of it, he was not going to do well, and you kind of had to put the puzzle together a little bit to find which receivers were more likely to succeed. I want to know if that drop issue was a real problem for college receivers transitioning to the NFL, or if it's just it happened. It was a thing.
Yep.
It is what it is. Drops happen, I guess.
Jamar Chase was dropping passes left, right, and center in the preseason
his rookie year.
He only wins rookie of the year.
That was a weird time, though, because even I got to that point of eventually, though, you do have to catch the ball, and he just sort of turned out eventually
was week one of the NFL season.
Yeah, he just sort of turned it on. I don't really know what ever happened there. I don't know if he was getting acclimated to the NFL ball or whatever it was, but that was strange. Concepcion, though, is going to be a really fun guy to keep an eye on at the combine. His measurement is going to be, I think, critical for him as well. He is listed at 5'11". That is, though, courtesy of Texas A&M, which I'm not saying it's an A&M thing. This is not the Texas in me coming out. It's normal.
You sure?
It's normal for every school. They're going to push the numbers up a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That is what it is.
That's true. That's very true. Every school does.
Every school is going to do that. This quarterback, he's 6'2", and you find out he's 6 foot. Diego Pavia shows up to the Senior Bowl. Hey, guys, he's 5'11". He's 5'9".
He's not 5'11", are you kidding me?
And this is the thing, he's 5'9 at the Senior Bowl. That's his official measurement. Concepcion could be the same thing. He's 5'11", 190. That's his listed weight and height right now. It could turn out he's 5'9", 180. And I will tell you right now at that point, that very much shrinks my desire for him to be a Buffalo Bill. It does. And I mentioned this with Xavier Worthy 2 years ago, where I didn't love the idea of him because he's not Tyreek Hill. He's 20 pounds lighter than Hill in his rookie year.
I don't think that wide receivers get the same treatment that Diego Pavia would.
No.
In this way, I don't know. It just seems like one of those things where, yeah, maybe you lie about 1 inch, not 2.
Which is so crazy. Guys, we all know he's a college quarterback. No one's fooling themselves and thinking Diego Pavia is going to be an NFL guy.
Diego Pavia, look at him outside of a football field and you can see it.
I will tell you, a part of me does really want him to get drafted because he gives, and not to the Bills, follow me with this. He gives off the vibe. There are certain guys, you get drafted at a certain point, my career is staying in the NFL. Be a mm-hmm. career backup, be really good, and I can do this for a while. Maybe get some spot starts, but I can make a career out of this. Pavia feels like the guy, and this is more just, I've seen him through interviews and stuff like that, but he feels like the guy that will get drafted in the 7th round,
and fully believe and cause problems to this point of I can beat out the starter, even if said starter is Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow. He absolutely gives off the vibe of you actually don't want him to be your backup quarterback.
The same things that were alleged of Shedeur Sanders, but like actually it's Diago Pavia.
But like actually, like no, this is not who you want as your backup quarterback.
Yes.
With that being said, though, I do want the Bills eventually draft a fun backup quarterback prospect in, say, like the sixth or seventh round so that I can enjoy preseason for the first time in years. I'm asking for anything here. I don't need Anthony Richardson. Anthony Richardson goes in the first round. But like I'm thinking back to the Trey Lance trade talk from a few years ago. Of, like I would have loved to have watched preseason football with him there. And if it's a sixth, seventh round pick, how often do those guys make the roster? I don't need Mitch Trubisky, who we all kind of know who he is. I don't necessarily need that. Other fun prospects maybe you want to keep an eye on, as I mentioned Trey Lance there, his brother, Bryce Lance, out of North Dakota State, same thing.
Love it.
And weirdly, kind of a similar career in college. He was a guy that did nothing for the first 2 years of his college career, sophomore and freshman year, basically did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then is a back-to-back 1,000-yard guy. 17 touchdowns the year prior, and then last year I think he was under double digits, but again 1,000 yards in North Dakota State's very run heavy offense.
That is impressive.
I am curious with him because it's again these FCS guys usually don't get the run until after the combine. Usually it's when you see the measurables, you see the 40 time, and all of a sudden it's like, well, okay, like this guy might be interesting. Not in the sense of jumps up to the first round like Christian Watson did a few years ago, but could be an idea of a fourth, fifth round receiver that doesn't just have special teams written all over them. That's also been, I know for many people, a frustration with the Bills treating a wide receiver, which is not throwing a dart out there in the fourth or fifth round and just be like, he's got a good skill set. Maybe we can get something out of that. Torrey Horton for the Seattle Seahawks this year. It's not a high pick, but like outside of Khalil Shakir, the Bills mainly use those picks for special teams guys, not people that maybe actually have something in the chamber that could be a role player on an offense,
I
but a role that they maybe need.
Probably the first one they do this with, though, is Gabe Davis.
Fourth round guy, but he comes in, has his spot role. And his entire rookie year, it feels like, if you go back and watch the highlights, is just Brian Daboll scheming him open.
Yeah.
Like that seems like the whole rookie year.
But it seems to work, and Davis carves out a role for several seasons with this team before he gets a lucrative payday from Jacksonville, and then injury effectively has derailed what could be his career at this point. But I do wonder, why not do that again? Like, you mentioned that, of like, Khalil Shakir is a player like that, or why not? Like, this is a player that he has a good skill set. He might be able to carve out a role on this team. It seems like they've done this a couple times and it's worked.
And it actually has ended up working out. Corner is also that just on the defense. Like they go draft corners that sure can maybe play like, special teams, but likely will be depth
or probably going to be willing. Starters. They're probably going to be willing to play special teams because they're a late round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of comes with the territory. But you draft the player to be like, okay, maybe there's something there. And that is something that screams the influence of Sean McDermott. The special teams portion.
I would agree with that. And it's not to say the special teams does not matter. That's not
true. I'm not trying to blame the guy on the way out of here for this, but if there's something that you would be able to sell me on the theory of how much influence did McDermott have on the drafting process, you could sell me on the middle rounds, middle to late rounds of focusing on a special teamer.
803-0550, the number two call. Let's go back to the phones. And Anthony is up next. Anthony, how are we doing?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. So I'm going to play a fun scenario out here, I guess. I'm not a big fan. I know some of the guys here on WGR are all about a wide receiver, but I'm against the wide receiver. So my thoughts, what happens if Brandon Bean makes a move and gets into, like, we'll say the top 15?
Mm-hmm.
And would... You know, is there a player as a wide receiver that could be the next generation player that we could use? Or is it better to get a linebacker? Because it seems that defensive players not automatically, but they can step into the role much easier than a wide receiver first year guy who's going to be who has a Hall of Fame quarterback throwing at him for the first time ever. So I was kind of wanted to kind of touch on you guys with that. And then you kind of touched it earlier about, you know, when do we start thinking about drafting a quarterback? Whereas, you know, Green Bay has drafted their 2-3 quarterbacks and they've sat for 5 years before, before Josh Allen after 5 years. I mean, hopefully he's still rolling with us, but you never know. So I'll hang up and listen, guys. Have a great day.
Anthony, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Anthony.
I want to start on the quarterback thing. I was mainly bringing that up just for backup purposes. Yes, like, I want to have fun in the preseason.
Yes.
I think in reality, though, he's turned 30. I've mentioned it a few times. I think Allen probably at a high end is playing at this level, playing like that 34, 35, maybe 36 years old. I will say, when guys like Aaron Rodgers...
I think you might be stretching it based on his physicality.
Right, and that's the thing. I'm maybe being generous there. I hope he maybe develops more into the pocket
passer.
I hope
you're right.
Yeah. But when you look at Green Bay, and really the college game now, the college game has never been more close to the NFL game. They are not as different as they once were. So you don't have to have Rodgers sitting behind Favre for, what, 3-4 years
right.
before he gets... If he was in that long, I can't remember exactly. But you don't have to have it be that long anymore. You can maybe wait till the year or so before you would have to give him over the reins. A la Patrick Mahomes with Alex Smith. He sits for a year and he's off to the races. You also sort of want to do that anyways with the fifth year option, or if you got draft a guy in like the second round, if you only got 4 years. You've got to know soon if you're going to pay him or not. You have to know early. And that's where I'll also push for a lot of these teams too of don't sit a guy past a year. You've got to find out. I think the Vikings, it hurt them. But they had to find out what they had in J.J. McCarthy. So I think we've got a few more years for Allen, but I think it's definitely going to be a discussion probably in the next 3 or 4 of do you want to start rolling the ball on this of like, hey, Allen won't be here forever.
If there's a high-end investment, kind of like what the Green Bay Packers did with Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers in the past, I think that that answer is probably at age 33, age 34 season.
Right. So 3-4 years, and we'll see where the team is at. Too. They may not actually have the luxury either of like, hey, actually, we have a ton of needs. We can't look at quarterback just yet.
Which is also getting closer to when Allen's contract ends up due in 2031. That's probably the time to do it. Mercilessly, it's a cold-blooded style, but yeah. Maybe you do invest a first-round pick in Allen's contract year.
Now,
when he is 35.
Mm-hmm. I will say, I will always push, though, for the kind of quarterback like Allen. I know it didn't work out, but Anthony Richardson, I want the guy that has the high ceiling. That will always be the case. And it's becoming harder, but you can start to get those guys later in the first round. Jordan Love is that as well for Green Bay. To the caller's other point, though, in this draft class, there is not that receiver. I like Mekhi Lemon a lot. I love Jordan Tyson. I would not say any of them are definitive. Hey, you get this guy with Josh Allen. He's 1,500 yards his rookie season.
Is Carnell Tate that?
No, I don't think any of them are. I like a lot of them. Tyson, I will say this on Tyson. My biggest issue with him is the red flags with injuries.
Yes.
Outside of that, I pretty much love everything I've seen about him. I've watched a lot of him the last 2 years because I do have a soft spot for Arizona State. I also love their quarterback, Sam Leavitt, who's going to be playing at LSU this year. So I watched a lot of Tyson. We talked with Marcel Louis-Jacques, who is an Arizona State fan, and he is right to bring up. Like, that is the alpha receiver you want. The offense ran through him. When it wasn't Cam Scadaboo the year prior, it was Tyson getting the ball. It's the three major injuries in three consecutive years. There isn't necessarily that guy. That's why I'm not huge on trading up. If they were to do it, though, and this is more my philosophy, it wouldn't be for linebacker. It would be for an edge rusher. If you're going to do that big trade up and it's not for a receiver, I would have it be for edge rusher. It's why I've talked about it. If you're going to trade for a veteran, I would want it to be on the edge, a Max Crosby. To that point, you're not going to be there to get Reuben Bain. I'm also really curious what his arm length is going to do for him. David Bailey out of Texas Tech might be somebody, although I've heard mixed messages on him. I want to watch more and read more about him as well because I've seen some people say he should go as high as the top 5. I've seen others who I respect say I don't see him in the top 15. So he could be somebody like that. But I will tell you, I like that Houston and Atlanta traded up to go get the guy that you think will get 10.5 sacks his second year in the league. And will be a problem at least in the first year.
Mm-hmm.
With, I mean, James Pierce, everything off the field, that's neither here or there. There were the red flags for him going into the season, but just the player, the feeling was coming out of Tennessee, he's a stud. Will Anderson for Houston, the feeling was he's a stud. He has been a stud.
If not for quarterback needs, he might have threatened to go first overall that year.
Right, and so it's going to be tough. I don't really know how high they can actually get. They're at 26. That pick is not nearly as valuable as I think many of us would hope it is. They can probably get up to 18 to 20 range at 26, plus packaging like a fourth. But you probably won't move up to, say, the Dolphins pick at 11 without also giving up next year's first-round pick, which I'm not really in the mood for a rookie. I would do that much. I would absolutely be willing to talk about that for a vet, not really for a rookie, especially in this class compared to what is projected in 27. 803-0550, the number to call. We are under 10 minutes left here in the third period. Coming up, though, in about 15 minutes, we've got Brad Ryder and Tim Graham coming up here at 1 o'clock. They'll have you from 1 to 3, and then Chilton the Bulldog will have you from 3 to 7. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, just here until 1 o'clock. We're hanging out here on a Friday. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR Sports Radio 550, and now on 104.7, 107.7 WGR FM.